Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Joel Freeman and his family. I want this to be the best year ever for all our friends worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into Joyce Barry and Friends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is joycebarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Good morning, folks. Today we're going to have an incredible guest, Joel Freeman, who will talk to us about Black history. I know of no other person that is so in tune with it as my friend, as my dear friend Joel Freeman. But first, let me start with some quotes by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. A man who won't die for something is not fit to live. I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. An individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualist concerns to the broader concerns of all of humanity. Our scientific power has outrun our spiritual power. We have guided missiles and misguided men. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. A genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. And in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Joel, did any of those quotes strike a particular chord in you? Did you have a favorite?
Well, a thing I love about Martin Luther King is Dr. King is that he was such a precise speaker. You take a look at every one of those quotes you just mentioned and more, and even his I Have a Dream speech, which most people focus on and just know a few words to. But when you look at the entire speeches that he has written, and they're published on the internet, and it's very easy for people to access them, there's such an economy of words. And I just think of Abraham Lincoln, you know, when he was doing speaking about the Gettysburg Address, and how he had wings of flight to get to the point he wanted to make. And that's really what Martin Luther King Jr. was all about. And he lived, I watched an interview with him on Face the Nation, I think it was. And I watched how the commentators were trying to trap him with certain questions, and how he artfully went up to 30,000 feet above the ground and just gave such a global perspective on what they were trying to trap him in. He just refused to be trapped. And at such a young age, when you think about how young he was, and just take a look around at, I mean, all of us, when we were at that age in our early, late 20s and early 30s, I mean, I look back on my life and I say, my goodness, I didn't have the kind of root system, the timber, to be able to handle the pressures that he was up against. But I guess when God calls somebody, he equips them. And I think that's exactly what happened with Martin Luther King Jr. You look at his father, his mother, the way he was raised up, truly remarkable. And then you look back even further into history, and you see individuals like a Harriet Tubman, or even a Frederick Douglass. One of my favorites is Frederick Douglass, the way he influenced Abraham Lincoln, and the way that he understood the proper use of power to help others. And it was used, that's the purpose of power, is to help others, and how giving up something you want is important in order to help someone else, and how he just communicated how to learn, how to challenge and overcome doubt, and how to understand why and how to control the human ego, how to just do what's right and proper without delay, even if no one is looking, because that's really what goes on behind the scenes. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, the kind of information and wisdom, I believe, that Martin Luther King Jr., he kind of drew his water from these wells, you know, learning how to use knowledge and to understand things from in a deeper perspective. How to overcome indecisiveness by developing proper organizational skills. You see that throughout Martin Luther King's work and the way he influenced people. How to make gratitude a part of every thought, every action. How to practice the skill of listening before making a judgment. How to remain true to your word. Just the whole idea of practicing the art of giving without expecting something in return. You know, this is the kind of stuff, you know, that I think is an important thing to realize, that Martin Luther King, he had his challenges as any other human being, but he somehow rose above them and around them and was able to articulate and communicate something that captured the imagination and the action of millions of people.
That is, you know, all of what you said really hits it on the head. That I have a dream speech, you're so correct, most people can quote a sentence or two, but that was a 17-minute public speech that Dr. King delivered on August 28, 63, in which he called for racial equality and an end to discrimination. The speech from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom was a defining moment of the American Civil Rights Movement, delivered to over 200,000 civil rights supporters. That speech was ranked the top American speech of the 20th century by a 1999 poll of scholars. So having said that, I just wanted to say that as much as I follow the civil rights movement, I did see the movie Selma, which came out recently. I highly recommend it to everyone. But of all the civil rights leaders, my personal favorite was Dr. King. I guess he's the most well-known as well. And what's going to be special about today's show, we'll hear about some other extraordinary black people as well, from our highly accomplished guest today, and that would be Joel Freeman, an extraordinary author, internationally sought-after conference speaker, workshop facilitator, and so much more. Professional counselor, success coach to executives, behavioral analyst, organizational culture change specialist, corporate trainer, motivational consultant, mentor to pro athletes, multiculturally astute, with travels to more than 50 countries. If I just wanted to share Joel Freeman's bio, that would be the whole show right there. I want to say that. It is so impressive. I could go on and on. He's listed in Who's Who in the World. He served for 19 years as mentor chaplain for the NBA Washington Wizards. That would be in 79 through 98. He's president of the Freeman Institute consulting firm, and that facilitates staff development, leadership, change management, cultural competency programs for leaders of other nations and government agencies, and as I said, so much more. Joel is, in my opinion, one of the world's foremost authorities on black history, and he is not black. Joel will tell you that he's a student of history because he learns something every day. I also appreciate that he knows as much about Israel as any scholar I've talked to. He loves Israel, and he's not Jewish. And I just wish there were more people like Joel Freeman that want to know, always learning about people on the other side of his religion, on the other side of his color. Just an extraordinary person who indeed is out there every day making a difference in the world. Joel Freeman, we are blessed and honored to have you on the show. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Joyce. It's always an honor to be here. And as we've discussed, you know, I just view myself as a student, never an expert on these topics, and I'm always learning. God gave me two ears and one mouth, and I've learned a whole lot more by listening than I have by speaking.
And folks, when you listen to this show today, you cast your vote. Is Joel a student of black history or one of the world's foremost authorities? You decide. I've already decided. Okay, Joel Freeman, over to you. What would you like to share about this awesome month that we support and that we appreciate black history?
Well, I look at this particular month as a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk about things and focus on things I think that are very important. I know that I grew up in Alberta, Canada, and where I come from, it really is the, I guess it was more focused on Native American Indians, and there was a caricature of the drunken Indian down at the reservation. I left home when I was 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America. Probably put about 5,000 or 6,000 miles on my thumb. Became a long-haired hippie, a dope-smoking fool, and just kind of went from one place to another. And when I got here to the United States, of course, I was born and raised in Maine and New Jersey and some other parts of the country. But when I got back down here to the United States, it was hard for me to even put it into words. I just couldn't quite figure things out in terms of the racial divide. And so basically, that was really kind of a learning experience for me. And what happened is I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards. And my interest in black history began to emerge because some of the African-American players in the NBA began to ask me questions of which I had no answer or even a response. So instead of being shamed by that, I began to take that as a motivation to want to learn more. And that's really what happened is... As I began to formulate, do research to formulate responses to these things, and then the questions came, you know, what did Jesus look like? Because I was a chaplain, and people wanted to know things like that. What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? And then I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin, and Don really helped me to understand some things from a biblical perspective and then from a historical perspective. We ended up co-writing a book together called Return to Glory, subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And that subsequently became a film that is now in French, Portuguese, Spanish, and English subtitles. It's been seen by literally millions of people. I'm just blown away by that. And to think of... I view every month as Black History Month, White History Month, Asian History Month. You know, I just see it as a wonderful cornucopia of understanding. I guess it was Saint Francis of Assisi who said this. He said, "Seek to understand before seeking to be understood." No, it was Augustine who said that in the 4th century. "Seek to understand before seeking to be understood." And I think that's an axiom that can be implemented in everyone's life. I mean, any husband or wife that seeks to understand before seeking to be understood for 28 to 30 days, it can have a transformational impact upon a marriage. Raising kids, seek to understand before seeking to be understood, can have an impact on the relationship between a parent and child and a child with the parent. And so I just think it's a wonderful thing to bring into, to import, if you will, into the whole concept of cultural competency, cross-cultural awareness, diversity, however one wants to describe it. It's just a wonderful opportunity to get to know people and to look beyond skin color and labels and begin to look into the heart. I love what Dr. Ben Carson says as a neurosurgeon, that when he opens up a brain, doesn't matter what the ethnicity is of the person, it all looks the same in there, and the blood is red. You know, it's just looking beyond it. I don't want to diminish the importance of race and ethnicity. I want to clarify that we all are humans wanting to make our way through life and understand. Understand people the best we can, and to find a good match for our kids, and to live in safety, and to just be helping people to live with a purpose that's greater than ourselves. I mean, that's the common experience. I've traveled over 50 countries around the world, and I find that racism and prejudice, it's everywhere. If you're a Korean in Japan, you're experiencing it. If you're a Roma, a gypsy in Hungary or any other European country, you're experiencing it. And so I think it's important to realize that that we need to address these things. We need to listen, then learn and share. And I know when I first became interested in black history on a deeper level, I began to realize that prior to that, I was afraid to say certain things, and because I was afraid of saying something stupid. And so I would just keep my mouth shut. If I held a different political opinion or a different view of whatever, I would just keep my mouth shut and smile. And now I find it's a wonderful thing to risk. It's kind of like investing. You know, if we invest finances, I tell my kids you got to have a certain amount of your money in low-risk investments and medium-risk investments and high-risk investments. And, you know, the rate of return on low risk is going to be low rate of return, high risk, high rate of return. But the same holds true with cross-cultural competency and conversations and awareness, I think, is that if we remain low risk in our approach to other people, we're going to get a low risk response and a low risk return. But if we move into the middle, medium risk and high risk department, and begin to risk with people and just say, hey, let's build a relationship built around trust and greater intimacy so that we can begin to have a greater awareness of each other and actually enjoy laughing at some of the things that people take so seriously. Not laughing at, but laughing with.
Very good distinction, laughing with, not laughing at. And I'm so with you, Joel, on what you're sharing, because I learned so much from other cultures. I so value, you know, their heritage as well. And I just want to see that spread out more and more around the world. We really need that today more than ever.
Absolutely true. I'm with you on that, Joyce.
So I know you want to share about some of the lesser-known figures in the civil rights movement. Annie Malone. What would you like to share about Annie Malone?
Well, I have, you know, most of the times when we do talk about Black history, it's really about certain individuals, and it generally comes up. You know, we talk about Martin Luther King Jr., Emmett Till. You know, there's certain number of individuals that are brought up, Sojourner Truth. And I think it's wonderful to discuss these individuals and to learn from them. But I'm an individual that loves to kind of go back into history and to figure out, okay, here's a wonderful person who's still alive maybe, or lived in more recent time periods. But I wonder, whose shoulders did that person stand on? What was the what kind of impact did that person have in their various spheres of influence? And what were they up against? I mean, that is to me the biggest part of it. And so I came up with the whole concept of blades of grass in a concrete jungle. And I even did a 90-second animated video. If someone goes on YouTube and just puts in blades of grass in a concrete jungle, they'll bump into this 90-second animated video that I wrote and commissioned to have done. And I look at it this way, that concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened. And it is, by the way, Joyce, it is absolutely impossible to be able to exaggerate when talking about the horrific nature of the slave trade and the peculiar institution of slavery itself. It's impossible. We can look at a movie, 12 Years a Slave. We can read books that are written by narratives by folks like Frederick Douglass, people who actually experienced it, and they try their level best to communicate the horrific nature of it, and we somehow can begin to grasp a little bit of it. But the concrete are those things. When we talk about lynching, we talk about the issues during Reconstruction and thereafter. We talk about some of the political issues between the Democrats and the Republicans prior to slavery and afterwards, and then getting into Reconstruction and afterwards in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and then getting into the time period around the Great Depression and then the Civil Rights era for terms of voting rights and civil rights. There are just so many things, so many pictures we can paint, so many verbal snapshots we can see. But the blades of grass are the people that who came up through the concrete in spite of it. And the best way I can explain, I think, the concrete is between, you remember Ariel Castro, he's 52 years of age. Between 2002 and 2004, he lured three young girls, kidnapping them for years in Cleveland, Ohio. And they were held there no more than 3 miles away from where they disappeared. And then on May 6th in 2013, Amanda Berry escaped with her six-year-old daughter, contacted the police. Castro was arrested the same day. We were all shocked by the stories that unfolded on the 24/7 cable news cycle. And we soon discovered that over the years, that Michelle Knight, Amanda Berry, and Gina DeJesus suffered and endured repeated rapes, physical abuse, and deprivation. He routinely beat them and raped the three women. He forced one of them to miscarry several times. And we saw the comments on the blogs and the internet-based news articles, and it revealed that the average citizen wished the worst for Castro. Castration, life imprisonment, some of the cruelest forms of death. And then with an unusual speed, the justice system moved, and he pled guilty to 937 criminal counts of rape, kidnapping, aggravated assault, and aggravated murder as a part of a plea bargain. He was sentenced to life in prison without chance of parole, plus 1,000 years. 1 month into his sentence, he committed suicide by hanging himself by his bed sheets. And it was Michelle Knight, she became the unofficial spokesperson for the three, just providing a glimpse into her experiences, into what she called the House of Horrors. Now, the revulsion we feel toward Ariel Castro in this modern time, this revulsion that we feel, this forced abuse of these three girls for 11 years, that is almost exactly what slavery is all about. It was kidnapping, and any slaveholder, no matter how high they got in society, no matter how well known they became, we would be revulsed by them today, no matter how well history seems to paint the picture about them. And even some of our founding fathers, when I stop and think of it, you know, and I have great respect for our republic. I am a patriot. I love this nation. But when I think of slaveholding issues and how their inability or intractability toward dealing with this particular topic, it just is stunning as we look at it through the lens of history. But it's the blades of grass, to get back to your particular specific statement there, is the blades of grass, I think, the people, the unknown people, the people that are not so well known, are the ones that really fascinate me. Now, if we have to take a break, we can take it. If not, I can start sharing about one of my favorite characters, Annie Malone.
Go ahead. Let's talk about Annie Malone. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah, Annie Malone, many people have heard of Madam C.J. Walker, who in her own right was, you know, many people view her as the first African-American millionaires. And she did much toward dealing with lynching laws. She helped to train up tens of thousands of women entrepreneurs in the health, beauty, and hair care industry. She was a remarkable woman in her own right. But when I think of Madam C.J. Walker, I then begin to wonder, who was it that taught Madam C.J. Walker? Who was it that took a risk with Madam C.J. Walker? Who was it that provided an environment for her as a young lady who went through horrific situations in her own life, some almost unmentionable here on radio. But she was able to somehow rise above it. Who helped her provide a new mindset for her life? And it was a woman by the name of Annie Turnbow Malone, who in the she was a woman in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. She brought this new freedom that came with the business and financial success for many women. She was a wealthy, wealthy woman. Just to stop and think about just some bullet points about Annie Malone, and someone who hardly anyone's heard of. She was one of the first in Missouri, the state of Missouri, to own a Rolls-Royce. Imagine this, 1926, she paid over $40,000 in taxes alone. Now stop and think, in this day and age, you know, in the 21st century, anyone paying more than $40,000 in taxes, you're just saying, wow, that's a wealthy person. Now go back to 1926 and think of this woman paying over $40,000 in taxes alone. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. Her philanthropy was legendary. What she would do, Joyce, is that she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs. Now, this was in an era where men, African-American men, were hired last and fired first, had a hard time providing for their families because of the social constructs and the cultural issues at the time. And so now, here's Annie Malone coming on the scene, early 1900s, providing a way for a woman now to bring money into the house so that there can be food on the table, so that there can be shoes on the feet, clothes on the bodies, education, and it just is an incredible situation. And what she did for these women, the women that worked for her, if they were with her for 5 years or more, guess what? She would give that woman a diamond ring as a thank you for her consistency. And then also, if she found out that a woman had a bank account, she'd give them a cash award. If she found out a woman had just bought a house, she would give them another cash award. She had developed a big building in St. Louis, Missouri, that was raised. It was torn down in the 1960s. But I have a booklet in my collection from 1926 that I created into a museum-quality reproduction. And maybe some of our listeners would like to have a copy of that. It'll astonish you. And it is a transcendent quality to it. But if someone goes to porocollege.com, that was the name she called her college in St. Louis, P-O-R-O, that's Paul Oscar Ralph Oscar College, porocollege.com. And that will give an overview about Annie Malone, but also it will provide an opportunity for someone to get a museum-quality reproduction of this 1926 booklet, and that they'll be able to give away as presents and will just be inspired by this woman because she's a blade of grass. Can you imagine? Here's a woman in a male-dominated society. Then you add another layer to it, an African-American woman, in a society that is totally against an African-American making it. And she comes up with a hair care products, beauty products, at a time when people were wondering what to do with, how do I manage my hair, how can I form a business or a job, have job opportunity. She's doing all of this at a time where the concrete is probably a couple of feet thick over her, and she manages to crack through it. It's
Joe,
an amazing story.
Give me a second. I have a couple of questions. One, when you talked about the thousands of people she trained, was that exclusively female?
Yes. It was all across the United States, part of Canada, and into the Caribbean. She had quite a wide impact. And of course, by doing this, she then provided a model that Madam C.J. Walker could follow. But also, look at Avon. Look at Mary Kay. She is the mother of the healthcare industry, but also the mother of the networking, you know, type of a business that these companies thrive on.
Now, did she amass her fortune doing that, or did she start by coming from a wealthy family?
She was a woman that was born in Illinois to former slaves. She was the 10th of 11 children, a poor farmer. Her parents died when she was young. She was raised by her older sister near Peoria. She was a sickly child. She missed a lot of school, which resulted in her having to withdraw before even completing high school. And when she was coming of age, the popular style among black women was straight hair, that straight hair look. And they were starting to turn their backs on braided cornrow style that they associated with the fields of slavery, and began to embrace a look for them which meant freedom and progression toward equality in America. And so while she was in Peoria, Annie took a very early interest in hair textures. And in the 1890s, she began to envision a way of straightening hair without having to use the methods of old, which included using soap and goose fat and butter and bacon and heavy oils, grease, you know, all that kind of stuff. She also saw the methods of hair straightening that employed uses of lye mixed with potatoes, and it was turned off by the procedure because it often resulted in a damaged scalp and broken hair follicles. And a lot of women at that age, at that time, at that era, were losing their hair. In fact, that's what Madam C.J. Walker came up with. She learned as a chemist to be able to mix certain things together, regrow hair. And that was lost because there's a lot of methods used to tighten hair, and it would pull hair out by its roots and weaken it and then ultimately pull it out. So it was a really big challenge. And so she was influenced by her aunt, who was an herbal doctor and had a knowledge of chemistry. She developed a chemical that could be used to straighten the hair without causing damage to the scalp or to the hair. And by the time she was in her late 20s, she developed a straightening solution that would grant her entry into this, what we talk about today, about this multi-billion dollar hair care industry. And so
Annie Malone was a self-made a millionaire, and you
yes.
said she was the first African American who amassed that kind of a fortune, and then
yes.
she
self-made.
Had an impact on C.J. Walker, but Annie was the first one.
Yes.
And amassed that whole a fortune on her own. That's awesome.
Was an amazing thing that when you put that up against the blades of grass and concrete jungle metaphor. Just think of the concrete that was laid over her from an early age, just not only internally in terms of her sickliness, growing up in a home where her parents died at an early age, you know, these types of things. So there's a lot of internal concrete she had to bust through. And then you look at the systemic concrete, the external concrete of our society that was stacked up against her. It's just an astonishing story.
It absolutely is. And the website, P-O-R-O, porocollege.com, people can access a booklet on there that you said is kind of like a treasure.
Yeah, the reason why it's a treasure is because it's her telling her own story. It has 48 pictures. And Joyce, when you see these pictures, it will blow your mind because you'll think, without the context of what I've just talked about regarding this woman, about Annie Malone, you would swear, if you were a betting person, you would bet on the fact that this was a building in Wall Street, New York. And just the type of furniture she uses, the walls, the orderliness of everything, the way she ran her business, is that any order that came in the morning, she would have it out by that afternoon by 4:30 when the mail went out Came in at 10:30 in the morning, would go out by 4:30 in the afternoon. And she had trucks. She had everything done there, the packaging, the development, the packaging. She had a school. She had a hotel. She had a gentleman's room where they could play pool and smoke cigars. And she had a rooftop on this four-story structure that you could overlook St. Louis with vines and tree, you know, bushes and everything on top of the building. It was just a place where you could just hang out, kind of like a cafe on the top. Just an incredible vision she had.
Let me ask you this. That booklet, is that something that gets printed out, or is it something that one purchases from the website?
They purchase it. It's on Amazon, and it's...
Or in the Poro College website.
Yeah, it's straight from there.
Very
but
good.
It's called Madam C.J. Walker's Role Model. That's the title of the booklet. And the reason I put that title on it is because a lot of people have heard of Madam C.J. Walker, but have never heard of a role model. So I wanted to, I figured if I titled it Annie Malone, no one would know. But if I put Madam C.J. Walker's Role Model, people would understand what the book is about.
Oh, so you are the author of that, Joel. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, I published it. It's from my own collection. I own the original, and then
okay.
It artfully reproduced, and then I wrote a preamble to it, and because I just wanted to get this out around the world.
Gotcha. Before we wrap up the Black History section, because I do want to talk to you about your recent trip to Israel, could you just say a little bit about Emmett Till, because he is a name from the past, but not a very familiar one. So could you just share a little bit about him?
Yes. He is someone that he was murdered when he was 14 years of age. And
wow.
The thing about Emmett is that just to kind of think about, you know, what he went through as a young person. This was in 1955, I believe it was August, and he was it was reported that he was flirting with a white cashier in a grocery store, and I guess the young lady said something to her boyfriend or coworkers or something like that. And who knows? He probably was just being nice. 14-year-old kid just being nice to this white girl, this white cashier. And so 4 days later, two white men kidnapped him. Imagine this. Two grown men kidnapping a 14-year-old kid. They beat him and shot him in the head. And what happened is that the men were tried for murder, but then an all-white male jury acquitted them.
And
really, it was his murder and his open casket funeral that actually galvanized this whole emerging civil rights movement that occurred. Because, you know, it was the 1960s where things really began to take off. This happened in 1955.
Wow, because I've known the name, but I couldn't place the story. Folks, we're going to take a break for just a couple of minutes to hear from our health guru, Beverly Nadler, on why it's healthy for you to listen to this show every day.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. for Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce Barry and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we'd like to ask you to partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and friends.com. And right under my picture on the upper left, you can click on follow. And once you do that, you will get an email every day of who the guest is, who the show is, what the topic is. And the good news is, for those of you that cannot be with us at 11 a.m. live, and of course, it's all different times all around the world, you can hear any of our shows 24/7 in our archives. So that would be joycebarryandfriends.com. Joe, let me go over to you. Before we move into your conversation about Israel, why don't you let people know the best way they can reach you or the best website? I've got lists of your websites, Joel Freeman. There's so many. So
people go to Poro College, my bio, everything, video clips and all that kind of stuff can be seen on the links to the left. So Poro, P-O-R-O College. .com. It's Paul Oscar Ralph Oscar College.com, P-O-R-O, and then that'll give them, you know, ways to get a hold of me. I'd love to, if anyone wanted to have an event in their community around any of these topics or other topics that I'm involved with, I'd be very happy to. Rosetta Stone, you know, the diversity, dealing with people who drive you crazy or anything like that, it'd be wonderful. I'd be very honored.
As I was saying earlier on, there's so much I could say about you that alone would be the whole show. Another website, Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N, Institute.com as a main website. Black101.com, the Black History Collection. JoelFreeman.com, JoelAFreeman.com, Joel's bio. So the list just goes on and on. The books, dealing with people who drive you crazy. Another website, WorkHardWorkSmart.com. So once you look up Joel Freeman, believe me, it could keep you quite busy because he is quite extraordinary. And it's funny because when you mention PoroCollege.com, all the lists I have, that is the newest one because it's not on any of my lists. So that's the newest one. I also like the book, God is Not Fair, Life is Not Fair. If nobody loves you, create the demand. I mean, Joel, every one of these topics, every one of these books, every one of your areas of expertise, I would love to do a whole show on. So at the very least, I can let people know about it. I do believe I've seen the film Return to Glory. Who was the lead actor in that? It definitely rings a bell, and it was many years ago that I saw it.
Well, it's a film that I co-produced, and it's a more of a documentary. And it's so we have Adrian Branch, who used to play in the NBA. He has a championship ring with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's the narrator, the docent, the guide throughout the entire film. And we set it up at Frederick Douglass House in Southeast D.C. We had full access from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the evening, and we used various rooms in that home, in Frederick Douglass's home, to as a backdrop for the narration to guide the viewer throughout the whole film.
Yeah, I have heard of it, Return to Glory. Okay, we are winding down here, so I want to just get a few things in. One is just I want to say hi to Pianki in the chat room. I've never seen you there before, so when I see an unfamiliar name, I like to extend a special welcome. Appreciate you for being there and want to recommend that you become a follower of our show so you'll know more of what we're doing each and every day. And you could, if you don't mind, mention in the chat room how you heard about this show today, from which venue you heard about us. And having said that, I want to move on to Israel, which is truly a passion of mine. line of the support of Israel, and I know you do support Israel as well. Joe, you just took a group there on tour. What would you like to share about Israel? Anything you want to say about historical significance? I just wish people worldwide would have more of an appreciation of Israel and block out all the propaganda that you hear about it. Over to you, Joel.
Well, I just got back. I was there more on a working trip than anything else. And it was because I've been over a number of times, and I lead groups. In fact, I've got another group I'm taking October 30 through November 9th this year, and they can go to IsraelCrazy.com to learn more about that. Just as it sounds, Israel Crazy, C-R-A-Z-Y, IsraelCrazy.com to understand what that trip is all about. But this was more of a working trip. I went with a friend of mine and about 18 other people, and we met every morning to discuss our plans for the day. And he has kind of a – Bob Cornuke is an interesting character. He's the kind of person that will look at historical places, landmarks, and kind of have a different perspective on it, kind of an Indiana Jones approach. And I was intrigued enough with some skepticism, intrigued enough with his latest focus to go, to take a week off and just go to Israel and hang out with him and to go on some of his adventures. And he's one that he's written a new book called Temple. And his thesis is that Solomon's Temple was not built on the Temple Mount, but actually in the city of David, about 400, 600 feet away from the Temple Mount area, a little bit lower than that area. And so I was intrigued because down in the bowels of the city of David, there is a place that no tourists go to. Still still an archaeological site, a dig, workmen working around it. Eli Shachron, who is the chief archaeologist of the city of David, he led us. He took out his key, unlocked the lock, and we had to all bend down and go through this little small opening. We went into this huge chamber that I think Netanyahu just saw for the first time some months back. And so
The Prime Minister of Israel, folks, for people who don't know, Bibi Netanyahu.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify. Go ahead.
Yes. And so it was kind of an interesting experience just to go down into this place, and we saw part of the room, there was an area where oil, olive oil, was made. And if you read the Old Testament, you realize that oil was made in the temple, and it was used for the anointing of the priest and for other purposes. And then you go to another spot, and there's very clearly a place to sacrifice animals. And large animals and smaller animals. In fact, there were three spots there that were like holes drilled into the stone that were used to, I'm sure, they're not too high off the ground, so probably for sheep or goats to be held in place until they were sacrificed.
I would prefer that we leave that part out for the animal lovers like myself that are getting kind of squeamish. So please move
Well, it
on.
Was there. It was there, and it's all part of biblical history and Jewish history.
Yes, I know. But
then there was
for those of us that are squeamish, just thinking about it, go ahead.
Yeah.
I still have trouble when I think of Bambi. It still brings tears to my eyes.
and that's a cartoon.
that was the Disney movie. Yes, a cartoon. But to this day, if people say they're hunting deers, it really upsets me because I still feel bad for Bambi. Go ahead, Joel.
I understand. So, basically, it was another spot there. There was a stone that was about 2.5 feet long by about 15 inches wide and maybe 3 inches thick, that was standing up. And Ellie told us that when they came to this stone, because imagine this whole area is just filled with dirt and other archaeological remains, pottery, potsherds, and all kinds of different things, maybe some coins. And he also found a bell, a small bell that you hold in the palm of your hand, but a bell that was put on the high priest's bottom of his robe. And because back in the day, they would tie a rope around the ankle of the priest, and if he did something wrong in the presence of Jehovah, he would be struck dead, and they would have to pull him out of the Holy of Holies. And the bell on the bottom of his garment, if that kept ringing, they knew everything was okay. And actually, Ellie found one of those bells. And it's pretty astonishing all on its own right there. And in that area, I believe it was. And then the stone, when you read about Jacob and the time when he fell asleep and saw the vision of the ladder with the angels ascending and descending into, up and down into heaven. And then when he got all done, the next morning he woke up, and he then, the stone that he had laid his head on as kind of a pillow, which I have a hard time imagining finding a stone. I'd much rather have a branch, a bough, some hay, some grass, or something like that, put my head on. But anyway, that's what he did. And then he laid it up, straight up, and poured oil on it and called the place Bethel, which in the Hebrew means house of God. And so is this Jacob's stone? No one will ever know. There's no way of knowing whether it's, unless there's some extra biblical writings that stated that it was brought to the city of David from Bethel. But it is a very interesting find. And what Ellie called that, the Holy of Holies, that place where the stone was, that it must have been a very holy place. So anyway, that, and then also we went to other areas around that region in the Kidron Valley, looking at different things and then discussing it. And then also on the last day I was on my own, I went four-wheeling, off-roading all around the hills around Jerusalem. Joyce, I didn't even know this was something you could write down on a list, a bucket list. I actually crossed it off the list before I even put it on the list. It was just an incredible experience going with one of my dear friends, Iftach Berman, and we went probably 30, 40 kilometers and off-roading, and if we saw a cistern or a well or some type of a spring or a tomb or a cave, we'd stop and investigate it, and it just was an incredible, incredible experience for me, one that I put in the top five experiences of my life.
Wow. Joe, why don't you just share a few things about how much Israel contributes to society around the world? I just want people to be more open to seeing Israel as the major ally and not buy into the negativity that comes out in the media.
Oh, my goodness.
Where do you start?
What happens? When people begin to realize about Israel and Israelis, I mean, just to stop and think, you know, people who are part of the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, they better not use their cell phones, because a lot of the circuitry is done in Israel. And when you stop and think about the, you know, the global Jewish population is approximately 14 to 15 million or so. That's about 0.02% of the world's population. And yet, when you think about it, you look at the 129 Nobel Prizes that have been received, we find that, you know, the facts are incredibly clear, you know, that Israelis are not promoting brainwashing children in military training camps or teaching them how to blow themselves up and cause maximum death of other people. You know, they're not interested in hijacking planes or killing athletes at Olympics, or there's just destroying a church. They're not interested in, Israelis are not interested in trafficking slaves. They don't have leaders calling for jihad or death of all infidels. And I just think, you know, when you think about what Benjamin Netanyahu once said, he said, if Arabs put down their weapons today, there would be no more violence. If Jews put down their weapons today, there would be no more Israel. And so I think that even for those who aren't particularly sympathetic to Israelis and to these types of things, you know, I just think it's important to know that you know, in World War II, more Germans were killed than British and Americans combined. But there's no doubt in anyone's mind that the war was caused by Germany's aggression. And, you know, and you think about all the things that have happened against the Jews, I just think it's important to realize that Israelis have really come back from an awful lot and have contributed so much to the sciences, to medicine, to economics, to physics, to peace, to literature. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm a total protagonist. Jews have made their mistakes and in Israel. But you have to think about the paranoia when you live with literally hundreds of millions of people around you who are sworn to destroy you, and you're living in this tiny sliver of land that at some points is only 10 miles wide, and you stop and think about you know, all that has been accomplished. You know, talk about the blades of grass in a concrete jungle metaphor. It's an astonishing picture. And so I just think it's important just to say, hey, you know, let's let Israelis have this small sliver of land, do what they do, and if they've turned a desert into a place where vegetables and fruits and all kinds of things are growing, where technology is thriving, where there's an economy that is growing and expanding, and the dedication of the young people to go in the military. I mean, it's just an incredible picture. It's a miracle, actually, when you think of the definition of a miracle that we're even talking about Israel right now. Because I know that in 1869, Mark Twain wrote a book called Innocents Abroad, and in there he went to Palestine and he said it's nothing more than just bramble bushes and some Bedouins, and it's just a God-forsaken place. And you look back from 1869 to where it is, you know, just even 100 years later, and you see the desert blossoming like a rose. And then you look at Bible prophecy, the Old Testament prophecies about the nation of Israel and the people themselves. It is an astonishing miracle.
And it's also an astonishing miracle that we were able to get our friend Joel Freeman on the show today. He travels all around the world, literally. He's got about 50 projects that I know about. So indeed, we're very blessed. What would you like to say in closing, Joel?
Just, it's a joy to be on with you, Joyce. And I wish all the best for all the listeners. And just I pray that, you know, that we will, as a nation and as a group of people, you know, seek to understand before seeking to be understood. And I just think that will go a long way in solving some of the issues surrounding race relations and some of the idiotic things and evil things that happen in the name of one race over another. And I just think it's time to just to exercise common sense and love and affection and appreciation for other human beings, because when you think about it, you know, it's, you look into anybody's eyes, there's a drama of pain behind every pair of eyes, And it's just important, I think, to be kind to people, to be aware of evil people. There are evil people, but that's a very small percentage when you think about, you know, what happens when there's a national tragedy, you know, bad weather or something like that, and how people really do have a desire to help others. It really is there innate inside of us, and I think if we can tap into that, and I'm a follower of Yeshua myself, and I just think that it's an important thing to understand that religion is not designed to destroy or tear down. It's designed to help and encourage.
Very well stated, Joel. You know, there is a small percentage of evil, but since the media focuses on that, that's what we're seeing every day in the newspapers, on the television, everywhere. So we really need to shift that consciousness and focus on, as Joel was saying, seek to understand more than even to be understood. And I would say add to that the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And every time I see an atrocity or hear about it, I always say to myself, my goodness, didn't anyone teach them the golden rule? And our friend Len Cain, who was nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize, including this year. Len Cain, he's a regular on our show as well. Let me refer you to his website, thegoldenrulesociety.org. So, Joel, I thank you. We're very blessed to have you on the show. It's an honor and a privilege, and we wish you all the very best. And to all our listeners worldwide, this is my prayer for all of you. Make this the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May this be the first day of extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make it the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. God bless you all. Thank you for listening today.